Hello, learners, and welcome to Learn On Podcast, the science show by kids for kids. I'm your host, Jansi, and today we have two very special guests. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Meyer Altman. I am a licensed clinical psychologist, and I have the pleasure of being the chief clinical officer at Brightline.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kendra Reed. I am also a clinical psychologist. I am the VP of therapy here at Brightline.
So for our listeners to get into this conversation, can you tell us what is Brightline? And then also, this goes for both of you, what is your role specifically within Brightline?
Yes, great question. So Brightline, I would describe, so we're the first comprehensive evidence-based virtual behavioral health solution. So what that means is we provide high quality mental health care based on research to kids and families and teens across the nation. So really focused on providing high quality care, culturally centered care, and we partner with health plans and employers primarily to get access to kids and families around the country. My role as chief clinical officer, I oversee our clinical teams, really focused on the quality of the care we provide, really also closely partner with our product team and our operations team and thinking through how we make these services available. And then one of the clinical voices on the executive team and helping set strategic direction of the business and the organization.
And my role as VP of therapy is to oversee our therapy offering. So I work very closely with Myra as my boss to look at what we're doing for therapy and hold really clear, high quality and state of the science standards for the type of care that we offer to youth and families that come to Brightline. We have a set of therapy managers that work directly with our providers. And then I also, just like Myra, work very closely with our cross-functional partners in product and operations and marketing and other areas to make sure that our clinical voice is woven throughout all different facets of the company.
That's super exciting. And so you both mentioned family-centered care and the clinical approach. So how does the Brightline approach work, and how does this make the program really effective and maybe set it apart from other options for families?
Yeah, I'm happy to start at sort of the high level, and then maybe Kendra, you can layer in the therapy component. So at a high level, I think what makes Brightline unique is partially our approach. So we think of ourselves as providing services across a full spectrum of need for kids and families. And so very often in traditional settings, there might only be one type of care available to kids and families, and that exacerbates the challenges we have with wait lists and lack of access to care. And so with Brightline, when you come into the Brightline platform, when you create that account, we ask you a series of questions to see how you're doing, what challenges you're facing. And we use that information to sort of guide a recommendation about where you might start in care. And that could be anything from coaching, so developing skills and working on particular areas of your life. It could be therapy, so more clinical needs. And we also have psychiatry and medication management services. And then across all of those, we also have what we call Connect, which are like our digital offerings. So reading articles, watching videos, et cetera, to sort of support. So I think that's one thing that makes us really unique is providing care across that whole continuum of acuity, whether you're doing really well and you want to maintain that good mental health, or if you're having some more challenges and want to get more therapeutic support. Kendra, what would you add?
Totally. So I guess I would add that what we think of as therapy, like people think of like, I'm going to get help for my mental health. I'm going to come get therapy. And I think just as you said, Myra, that's what really sets us apart is thinking innovatively about all the different levels of care that people could receive to help them. Some people really like a commitment to weekly therapy is more than they're looking for. And they might actually just need like a smaller, bite-sized, less intense experience to really help them given where they are. And as a field, we are coming along on that journey of innovation and seeing, really exploring for whom does each level of care work best, and really trying to expand our consideration of what care might look like. So on the therapy side, you know, we have our traditional weekly meet with your therapist sort of approach. We also have care that's mostly directed for caregivers, or can be split half and half. That's a specific agreement that families can work on with their provider that they work with. And that's also what makes coaching and Connect really, really exciting additions to the spectrum of care that we can offer here. Because throughout all of that, the evidence-based interventions that we know from the literature are the foundation of what we provide. So you're not getting different advice at different levels. It's just the intensity of the support is different.
Right. That's wonderful to hear. I think the way that you both explained it makes a lot of sense. It's fantastic to hear how you're kind of tailoring that experience based on what your patients might need. And then something that I'm curious to learn a little bit more about is you mentioned the regular therapy, traditional therapy versus resources for caregivers. And since Brightline is centered around families, how is behavioral health treatment for youth different for that of adults?
Ah, that is such a great question. I think that no person exists completely in a vacuum, and that's especially true for youth, right? You live with the people in your immediate environment for most people, but certainly not all. That's their immediate family or other relatives or the people within their system. So oftentimes we think of these concentric circles of somebody's system. And we also think about the school system and the people that are in a person's environment in that area. So I think what's different about behavioral health for youth is that there are different systems that we're working within and pulling into care. Instead of just meeting with one person in isolation, not talking to anybody else in their environment. And that's not to say that we must talk to your school if you are in therapy. We only do this in partnership with the people that engage in care with us, and only if it's relevant, right? Only if it makes sense for us to talk to, say, a teacher or something like that. For most of the time, it is really helpful to bring in caregivers to care because sometimes they need help too, right? You know, oftentimes, I mean, they don't always know what they're doing either, to be fair. As a parent, I feel like I'm particularly equipped to say that. We don't know either. So pulling caregivers in to really help them think about how they could respond or how they can support rather than just having it be a solo journey for the youth in therapy makes sustainable change more possible.
I really love the analogy of the concentric circles. I think that makes so much sense because we are just so affected by the people around us, and especially for youth, having those adult role models and those caregivers to be able to support during the process of therapy is really, really important. So that makes a lot of sense. I think it's great that Brightline really emphasizes this in the approach for treatment. And a specific use case that I'm interested in asking more about is over the pandemic, there was definitely a big burst online of awareness for mental health and also the need for more mental health care just because of the conditions of being isolated at home. So how has Brightline supported you through the pandemic, especially with your digital platform and online resources?
Well, we really only existed after the pandemic began. I think that's what's really interesting about Brightline. I think, isn't it true we were supposed to be like a brick and mortar company, but now we're totally virtual.
Around February 2020, the team was picking out carpets for in-person clinics, and then we all know what happened in March 2020. And so it was a really rapid shift to entirely virtual. And there were a lot of questions that came with that in mental health in general. How do we provide these services? I think what we have seen and what the research has generally shown is it's really possible to provide incredibly high quality care through telehealth. The research shows that it's got comparable outcomes to in-person care. You have to be, I think, a lot more thoughtful about how do you support people with higher acuity needs if there is high risk, whether that's suicidality, et cetera. And so really being thoughtful about what makes sense to treat virtually, what might you need to refer out, or how do you provide those extra layers of safety that you might need if you don't have somebody in your office with you. But I think we've seen, in general, the rates of telehealth have continued for mental health through the pandemic, as you know, more in-person services have gone up. I think people really, really, really value the convenience. If you think about, like Kendra was saying, if you're making a weekly commitment for therapy and you also have to pick your kiddo up from school, drive them to the therapist office, drive them back, that adds a huge amount of time to your day. So the sheer amount of the convenience factor of being able to do it online is huge. And then I will say Kendra and her team do an amazing job of like engaging the kiddos, obviously looking at a screen We all do it all the time, but it can be hard to engage kiddos through that. And so I think that's been another area that I don't know, Kendra, if you want to speak to that more about how your therapists really think about getting the kids involved and engaged virtually.
I think that's where a lot of our digital exercises come in, or other resources that our team of really excellent providers pulls into care, is just like, what is this particular youth really interested in? And how can I tailor the resources or the skills that I want to share with them to their particular interest? It's similar to what we would do in person. It's just that now we're sharing Zoom's virtual whiteboard instead of writing on the whiteboard on our wall, right? So I think it's totally possible. It just takes a little bit more mental gymnastics, but it's also been like the payoff is worth it because we also get a window into people's lives that we wouldn't otherwise have seen. Like I get to see, you know, if they're joining their session from their bedroom, I get to see and understand so much more about them because, whoa, look at those posters on your wall, or how you've chosen to decorate your room, or I get to see what's important to you. And that allows us to build a deeper connection a lot of the time. It's also made it so much more possible to reach people in more rural areas who have just historically not had access to care. You know, I live in Washington State, and so when the pandemic hit and we all went online, we were virtually reaching people who were hours and hours away from the nearest clinic, and they just had never had access before. And here was like a beacon of hope that they could get support. So while it's challenging to think of how am I going to adapt this thing that I would do in person to online, I used to work in a hospital. So I used to walk all around the hospital and crab walk around and sing songs and do silly things to help kids face their fears of being embarrassed or things like that. And I couldn't do that as directly online, but we could think about a way of getting to the same conclusion online, of getting to the heart of what we're wanting to practice. So it's been really interesting to think about like, what is the core of this exercise and how can I get to that just through the resources, the electronic resources that we have here.
Thank you. I think that was a fantastic answer. One common theme that we've definitely been looking at throughout this whole season with digital health is that, you know, online resources are so much more accessible, especially as you mentioned in rural communities. Even if someone is hours away from a local treatment center or a place to go to therapy, it's much more likely that they have access to internet and are able to access those resources. And I also really like that you mentioned how it's important to also distinguish the differences, because there are definitely some things that you can connect better with in person that just can't be recreated virtually. So when we are able to really understand those differences and how they impact the models of therapy that we're traditionally used to in person, and then we adapt based on that, it's great to hear that there's been a lot of success with this. And then you also mentioned how living in a rural area might be one of these barriers. But if you could talk more about the different barriers that can prevent young people from getting the mental health care they need, especially because, and you can definitely speak to this more, but I'm sure that there's lots of rules in place for kids going to therapy and the consent of their parent or what their parent doesn't need to know or what they do need to know. And I'm sure that that can reduce the autonomy of a kid going to therapy compared to an adult. So it would be great to hear more about that perspective.
That is such a good topic. I'm so glad you brought that up. And what's interesting about Brightline is that we're in all 50 states. So we have this really unique view of how every state loves to approach things differently, which makes our job interesting. In different states, you can consent to your own care at a certain age. In many states, it's 13, sometimes it's 14, sometimes it's 12. Again, everybody's choose your own adventure if you're a state. And this allows youth, and depending on what state you're in, to pursue and consent to care without your caregiver's knowledge. You own your care totally. Now, there are some different state rules and regulations, and it would be a very long podcast for me to go through, and probably really boring for me to go through them state by state. But just know that they're different and it's worth looking up where you are if that's something that you're interested in. It's also worth saying that while we involve caregivers in care, youth have a right to their own confidentiality, right? And it's people would stop telling us stuff so fast if the entirety of care was just like, I'm going to meet with you, tell me everything. Now I'm going to meet with your caregiver and I just tell them everything. So usually what happens is we set the limits up front. Here are the things that'll just stay between you and me. And here are the things where I would have to tell your caregivers. And usually that's about a limit of safety. If I'm worried about your safety or the safety of someone else based on what you told me, I have to tell somebody because safety is my number one priority. And then outside of that, we talk together about what's shared given from what you've shared with me. When we meet with caregivers, we're usually sharing with them just the plan. If we're talking about depression, for example, it's like, hey, here's what's helpful if you're a parent and your kid is experiencing depression, your teenager. Here are some things you should do. Here are some things I'd recommend you avoid. What are some things that you're noticing? So it's less about telling the caregiver everything. Again, people would stop coming so fast. And more about how can we help caregivers be a support in changing the system so that they don't accidentally work against what we're working on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it goes back to, I think, what Kendra was saying at the beginning about the importance of that system. Right? Like, how do you balance what is it the child wants to keep confidential and have autonomy around? And also, how do you think about how they might also want to incorporate their caregivers? And that can be a part of conversation and that can be a part of the treatment too. Like, how might you set a boundary or how might you be vulnerable and open up to your parents? And so that, I think, can weave in as well. I was thinking about your earlier question of sort of what are some of the barriers as well. And I think stigma remains a barrier. Yes. I think a silver lining of the pandemic is more and more people are talking about mental health. And so I think the stigma is going down, but that's certainly not universally true. And it's not true across every population. And so finding ways to break down the barriers and just have people know that it's okay to get support. I think this is another area where like coaching or digital resources can also be really, really helpful because it can feel different to say, oh, I'm working with a coach on organization skills might feel easier than I'm working with a therapist on depression. So I think having those different entry points for people can also really matter as we start to just normalize getting support in different ways. And then what's nice about Brightline is like, let's say you start by working with a coach, you're in that ecosystem. And if you need more support, you can hop on over to just the next virtual room with a therapist. So the more we can do to just normalize that at some point in your life, you're going to have a challenge and you might need support. And that's totally okay. And hey, why not also start now in the same way that we teach math and we teach English? Let's also teach emotion skills. I often think like when I worked with adult patients, I'm like, oh, if only as a society we did a better job of being like, hey, these are what emotions are. And these are what thoughts are. And here's how they interact. And like, keep an eye out for the ways your thoughts might get in the way and make things feel tricky. So the more that we can do that earlier and give those skills and tools and knowledge to kids earlier, I think that's just better as a society for overall mental health, but also normalizing getting support when you might need it.
Absolutely. I feel like that exactly what you shared about getting these skills on board earlier in one's life being so helpful is a protective factor. I hear if I had a dime for every time I heard a caregiver say, I wish I had this when I was younger. I mean, I guess I wouldn't have to work for Brightline, right?
I do that when you're a child living on a beach.
Right, exactly. But it's just so critical. And there's been a change. There's been a shift. And actually, more often than not, I see the stigma sit with the caregivers much more than youth themselves these days. And I really want to help folks think about what therapy is. Therapy isn't always, you know, and certainly not a Brightline, isn't this like lifetime commitment where you're, once you're in, you stay for years. It's really episodic. It's focused on a concern or an issue that you'd like to address. We work on it together, build skills, but ultimately our goal is for you to go forth and fly in your life, right? And come back to us if you need us, we'll catch you. But our goal is not to make you stay with us forever. Our goal is for you to go live your life with us.
Yeah, 100% agree on all the information about stigma. And that's exactly why we're doing this work at the podcast as well, to be able to educate youth and adults about what it really means to get help for your mental health, to take care of your health, especially in a preventative way going early on. And I think that the way of thinking about it as something that's not a complete commitment or like coaching is so great. Or thinking about it like tutoring, like comparing it to a class was, I think it really stuck out to me because there's definitely lots of different ways that I've seen online that people have explained what therapy really means or what it means to get help for your mental health. But this, I think, really resonated with me in terms of reducing the stigma because it's not something that's a lifetime commitment. It's not something that labels you as someone who is sick or that there's something wrong. Correct. It's just that you might need additional support or resources. So I'm really glad that Brightline is able to take that approach. And also on the point of mandated reporting and the boundaries, what you can and won't tell the caregiver, I think that's also really important to establish those boundaries. Because I think, and also in my experience of talking to people who are around my age, a lot of the times people are afraid to go and get help for their mental health because of whether their caregiver might find out what their therapist might have to tell them. And so I think that being really clear about what has to be disclosed for safety and what stays confidential is really important so that the person who is getting help can really feel safe in that environment. So absolutely. Yeah.
Agree across the board. Yes.
Yeah.
That's safety and feeling like you can trust your provider and that you have, we call it rapport, but like you have a sense that you're working towards the same thing and you know what that thing is and you can do it safely together is critical. Mm-hmm. Without that, it's really hard to make any kind of progress. Definitely. And that's on the provider to create that space where you feel safe.
Yes, 100%. I think this was a really great conversation that we had, and we will have on our website and in the description of this podcast resources more about this if any of our listeners are interested in learning more. And I guess for my last question, what does the future of Brightline look like? And is there anything you'd like to tell us about what the team is working on or expanding or improving?
Oh man, what are we not working on? I think like broadly speaking, I'm really excited myself to keep thinking about all the different ways that we can provide care, right? So we've listed just what we have so far, but there are so many other ways that we could think about getting these resources and getting care to the people who need it and helping figure out who needs what level. As I was saying before, our field has started to do that work, but it's not a perfect science yet. So that's what I'm really interested in, is like all these different models of care or types of care that we can provide.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think podcasts are a really interesting example of that. Even I think groups are a really interesting example of that. I'm particularly, and this, I'm a newish mom. I have a 9-month-old. So I'm also particularly biased and interested in more of like the resources we can provide to caregivers. Because I think there is, and speaking to what we were talking about stigma, I think there's this expectation that as a parent or a caregiver, you know what to do and you don't. And so how can we equip caregivers with the tools and skills to like set that good emotional framework and that mental health grounding for their kids, but also for them? There's just so many, I think, tools and skills. Like I think about anxiety in particular. Kendra and I both have a shared love of OCD treatment, for example. And like, you have a kiddo who's anxious and, you know, maybe scared of germs. Of course, you as a parent, you're gonna be like, let me get rid of all the germs because I don't want them to feel anxious. And then that's the thing that makes anxiety and OCD worse. So I think there's these things like, how do we teach caregivers and parents these tools and techniques? So I'm very excited about more caregiver focus,
yes,
all the modalities, oh my groups, God, podcasts, who knows?
I would totally sign up to do a podcast weekly. That would be so fun. So I really appreciate
that. Writing that down, Kendra.
Yes, please.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Podcasting is so, so fun. And it's just, I think, a really great way to be able to connect with people around the world, even if you're not able to talk to them directly or see their faces. Just knowing that there's so many people out there listening while they like brush their teeth or go to school or whatnot. It's great. Yeah.
I love podcasts.
And so yeah, grateful that you're doing this.
Yes.
It's really incredible. Love being a little part of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And all of these things are, I think, really exciting to explore. And Brightline already has an incredible library of resources. Again, all of that information will be in the description, and we can't wait to see what the future of this is and how you all will continue shaping the future of therapy and breaking down the stigma for families, kids, and caregivers alike.
You too. Awesome. Excited to see where this goes next. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.